business commentator. Today it is Rebecca Stevenson, who is a senior journalist with newsdesk.co.nz. Business desk, I'm sorry. My computer's just gone nuts, sorry, and I can't see anything. Good morning, Rebecca.
Oh, good. That's a good start. Good morning, Catherine.
I don't know. I've hit some button. Wait a minute. I've hit that button, it goes full screen, and then you can't get out of it and get back to where you're going.
Oh, no.
So let me work on that while you tell me what you're talking about today. It's a bit of a wake-up call, isn't it, as a recession or near recession bites. We're going to learn more about that this week with current account out tomorrow and then GDP figures out on Thursday. But there's no question many firms are struggling.
Yeah, that's right. I think the rubber is really starting to hit the road, particularly in terms of formal insolvency processes now happening for businesses. We've seen the data come out now for 2023. There were 1,985 appointments in 2023 across those three formal insolvency processes. So that's liquidations, receiverships, and administrations. 2023 was up 21%. On 2022 and 34% on 2021. And mostly they were liquidations. So that was about 90% of all of those appointments. So about 1,800 liquidations in 2023. Now, who we saw getting the most work, I think, was kind of interesting. The official assignee, which is a business unit within the Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment, it had the most liquidation appointments over those 12 months with more than 300. And most of those were court appointed on the application of the tax department. So IRD is asking for these firms to be wound up. So that compares to about 176 that the official assignee was appointed to in 2022 and 106 in 2021. So quite a significant jump there in those applications by AR flowing through into the official assignee. So we spoke to MB's National Manager of Insolvency and Trustee Service, Russell Builders, and he said it had been seeing an increasing number of liquidations because of those COVID-19 lockdowns, which had really impacted the insolvency numbers before. They're well and truly kicking away now. Stephen Kov, he's a liquidator who's seen a lot of business flowing through in 2023. He said his firm has been quite a bit busier already this year, and he's seeing quite a few cash flow pressures, a lot of debt to the tax department out there. But he says that he thinks the massive impacts are still yet to come.
What do we know so far about 2024? Have we got more recent figures?
Yeah, that's right. So January is always a very quiet month in New Zealand for obvious reasons. None of us are around, but we've got 2024 February out now, which shows that insolvency appointments have ticked up. We saw 195 appointments in that month, which was 50% higher than each of the last 3 years on average. So February is well ahead, particularly when you look at the long-term average, is normally about 143 monthly appointments. So quite a few. Insolvency practice McDonald Vague said compared to the first 2 months of the past 7 years, 2024 is off to a really strong start. Obviously, we did have that pause, you know, where things were sort of went away through COVID, nothing was really happening. So McDonald Vague says it is expecting this insolvency momentum to continue into March. Historically, March is a really busy month, normally between 25 to 50% more appointments than seen in February. And McDonald Vague says this will be driven by solvent appointments and business owners just deciding to give it up and wind up their businesses before the end of the financial year so they can then get on to something else. Again, in February, we saw the official assignee pretty busy. It received about 46 appointments, with 45 of those coming from directors from the High Court. And 39 of those 45 were, again, IRD wanting to wind these businesses up. We also saw a significant surge in applications to wind up companies with 108 overall. Compare that with February 2023 when we saw 64. So it's not just IR as well getting on the action. 53 applications were not IRD, but there were other creditors wanting to wind up firms, but another 55 were IR and its continued push to collect outstanding taxes. So McDonald Reg said it thought this uptake was likely a combination of creditors really needing this money back from the people that owed them to help with their own cash flow in their businesses, and just a general losing patience with debtors and just getting over it and wanting to see these companies pay their bills one way or another.
Okay, so anything else? We're going to get to the mood of corporates a little bit later, but anything else there that just shows there are a lot of companies in trouble? Not just companies either. I know Centrix keeps a close eye on loans arrears, and that's another serious data point.
Yeah, that's right. You know, we did have this recent data from Centrix, which found that there were more than 450 individuals in arrears on their bills. This was quite significant. You know, this was the highest number that Centrix said they've seen since 2017, and it was 40,000 up on the prior month. McDonald Reg says with a population over the age of 18 of around 4 million people, this might be 1 in 8 people over the age of 18 in arrears on their accounts. And we did see some personal insolvencies in January, 25 bankruptcy filings in the month, 21 no asset procedures, and 9 debt repayment orders. Now, January, much like company insolvencies, is one of the slower months. But January, you know, we did see a bit of activity there. So McDonald Reg is saying that the signs continue to point to the New Zealand economy being in for continued pain, and it's likely to get worse before it gets better. On the flip side, I guess, for those insolvency practitioners, it means they are busy. As you pointed to, we do have a bunch of data out this week, new GDP data out, which will give us some more insight into how tough things are going out there for people and businesses.
And I think the focus this time when the GDP numbers are out on Thursday will be GDP per capita. Finally, after I don't know how many decades of focusing on a headline figure that is massively inflated when you're in high immigration times, we're focusing on the GDP per capita, which is what each individual is feeling by means of wealth. So I think there'll be more of a focus on that, already in a recession by that measure, I think, without too much doubt. Okay.
It will be fascinating.
Yeah, it will be. And of course, it's largely manufactured. This is you know, why the Reserve Bank has raised that cash rate and forced up interest rates.
Absolutely.
The next thing will be when it feels confident that that job is done. All right, let's have a look at a banking market study out this week. I want to say another one. Has there been a recent one, or was that a different one?
This will be the first draft of the banking market study out this week. So this was flagged, I think, in June of last year, and there was a little bit of uncertainty perhaps around this report with the new government coming in. You know, were they going to back it? Well, we're getting our draft. There was a bit of criticism about this initial focus of the market study. You know, there was some disappointment that it wasn't going to focus on business accounts, and it is just quite tightly focused. You know, it's going to be looking at deposit accounts and home loans. And the commission in its preliminary issues paper has really, I think, clearly spelled out why it wants to do this. You know, it says this is where most New Zealanders interact with their bank, it's where most of our debt is, and it's where most of our money is. So it says that this study will provide the first opportunity in New Zealand's history to consider and evaluate in depth whether competition in personal banking is promoting outcomes that benefit New Zealand consumers over the long term. So I think it will be interesting. You know, I caught up with Commission Chair John Small last week, and he is always making the point that, you know, these market studies are not the end. They are just the beginning of a process where the Commission gets a bunch of information which it could then use to sort of direct its work and understand the markets that it is regulating. And so it's fascinating. They already did have some preliminary findings, which Commission Chairman John Small said had raised questions for the Commission, and particularly around profitability, which is always that bogeyman, I guess, for New Zealand banks. The Commerce Commission said its initial review found New Zealand banks were more profitable than their overseas counterparts. So what's at stake here? There's a huge amount of money. You know, these registered banks hold about $435 billion in deposits, which is about 62% of their total funding. And there's also that often discussed home loan market, $348 billion. And that's about 86% held in the big four, those Australian-owned big four banks. So the Commission says we need to focus on these issues because we think we can tease a lot of interesting information out of here. It says those services are a focal point for competition within personal banking. They're relevant to many of us, and they are of particular significance to us because these are often our home loans and the largest debt or investment.
So will they get in and look at, will they get in and look at margins, whether margins have increased, where they're tracking against long-term averages? Is this the sort of stuff they'll do?
I think so. Yeah, they're going to want to lay out a clear picture here of what they see that's going on in New Zealand's banking system and why it is perhaps, you know, that New Zealand banks seem to be more profitable across those two really key services. And one of the interesting things that I think it's flagged it's going to look at is it's going to look at bundling or cross-selling. So bundling is the practice of selling two services together. The Commission says tying or bundling services can provide benefits to consumers, but it can also make it harder for consumers to switch and reduce that competitive constraint and lead to worse outcomes.
Well, they've had their eyes on the telcos for just that with bundling packages, haven't they?
That's right. So I think they're using what they've learned across a lot of other industries and seeing how these sort of themes, I guess, that perhaps don't help for competition, don't help consumers, because, you know, if you've got your internet power banking, you know, all with one group, it makes it hard to work out, you know, necessarily what you're paying for all these things, but also to shop around and then compare perhaps what might be better deals. And then it's also just the admin, you know, of then trying to shift all these things at once.
It's interesting.
So while it can make a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's interesting just with the question of whether there are excess profits, because that's what it did conclude when it did its big supermarket study. And it said, you know, it put a figure, multi-billion dollar figure, on what it believed to be excess profits. I know that we've spoken to Squirrel's boss, David Cunningham, formerly a banker himself, who actually laid out in that interview the margins and how they relate, the profit margins, essentially, and how they related to a long-run average and whether they had been ramping up. So it will be very interesting to see whether the Commerce Commission goes there. And I think the other question that people always have is your mortgage interest rates always seem to go up quicker than your deposit rates. Like, and that's where a detailed study is needed to get in there and say which part of the system is paying for another part of the banking system, and are deposit holders getting the benefits of the mortgage holders' pain. It'll be an interesting one. But Rebecca, you're still left asking, whatever happens after these things, you know?
Yeah, that's always the argument. And, you know, just quickly, you know, the Commission has said it is interested in the dynamic between those interest rates charged for lending and those interest rates paid for deposits, and wants to understand how banks are making those decisions. So that has been flagged that they want to look into. And look, this has been the criticism out of all of the market studies is, look, we didn't see the duopoly split up. We didn't see, you know, Carter Holt Harvey made to sell its retail arm, or, you know, all these sorts of arguments that we see over and over again. And I get it. I mean, I've often written that I'd love to see, you know, more action and more sort of drastic action, because it does feel like there's this just kind of cozy duopolies across so many industries in New Zealand that consumers have a sort of illusion of choice. But Commission Chair Don Small says, you know, it's a starting point.
Some have already done some of these analyses of the headline metrics. Are there others who've done who've done their own numbers and say, look, you know, this is higher than it ought to be, or higher than what's happening in Australia, for example, for the same company?
Yeah, look, we have a regular report that comes out. It's called the Financial Institutions Performance Survey. It's done by KPMG, and it just came out very recently. So we know that New Zealand banks continue to be highly profitable against global metrics. New Zealand's four largest trading banks and Kiwibank have all improved their net interest margins, or NIMs, in 2023. Now, NIMs, this is this fundamental indicator of bank profitability, and New Zealand NIMs are consistently higher than international averages, including in Australia. So we had a report out of Australia recently which said that the average NIM for the Australian trading banks was 1.83%. This KPMG report into the New Zealand banks found that the net interest margins for the sector in December 2024 was at an average of 2.34%. And so that's obviously higher than what we're seeing out of Australia, and it was higher again, even than what the New Zealand banks had recorded in 2022. Then it was 2.1%. So they're pretty good at earning margins from us here.
Now, not a good mood amongst the corporates, not surprising in current conditions, but this is a poll that's been done.
Yeah, that's right. So Talbot Mills had done a report for its corporate clients, which Business Desk had got its hot hands on, and it showed a marked negative shift in sentiment towards a wide range of corporate brands that it monitors. This was a poll of more than 1,000 New Zealanders in the first week and a half of March, and perhaps unsurprisingly, Building Giant Future Buildings' favourability rating saw the biggest slump. It fell 14 points. 24% of people seeing it in a somewhat unfavourable light, 11% feeling very unfavourable towards Fletcher Building. Obviously, it's been in the news a lot with its giant loss, 120 million bucks, and its half-year result, which saw that shake-up at the top. Sky TV was the only corporate that fared worse than Fletcher. 16% of those polled expressed a very unfavourable view of Sky TV, 24% somewhat unfavourable. However, Sky didn't have a great rating prior to that, so it only saw a fall of about 4 points from the previous poll. Interestingly, Air New Zealand, we love it. It remained one of the most favourably viewed brands. Three quarters of those polled expressed a very or somewhat favourable view of our national airline. All of the firms that it looked at were down between 1 to 6 points in the last quarter, BNZ down 6%. But we saw The Warehouse, Spark and Kiwibank only saw their favourability ratings fall 1%. So Talbot Mills said the national sour national mood appears to have affected corporate favourability ratings.
So it's not the sour mood among the corporates, it's the sour mood about them.
That's right. And there wasn't great news for the politicians either, but we'll leave those for others to discuss.
Wonderful. Thanks very much, Rebecca Stevenson, who is a senior journalist with Business Desk, businessdesk.co.nz.